Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Dori Shafrir.
Hello, I am Kate Spencer.
And we're not experts.
But we're just two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
And we also like to talk about Los Angeles.
We are going to go deep today.
So deep.
Into this city of angels.
Yeah, so we put together a little guide to Kate and Dori's LA.
Yeah, and you know, we do get a lot of emails or DMs. Often someone's coming to LA for a visit and wants to know various recommendations. And I should say that you and I are both transplants to this fair city. We're not natives.
We do not claim to be natives.
No. And I will say, you know, I moved here with a 9-month old baby. So I feel like my understanding of this city is limited.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like this is a very Forever 35 perspective on LA, because I was thinking about this morning. There's no bars on this. There's no clubs.
Nope. No bars or clubs.
No, it's all very much like...
But there's a perfume store.
There sure are perfume stores on here.
Yes.
So, you know.
This is what we like.
This is our LA.
This is not an exhaustive list of all this city has to offer.
No.
Because LA is amazing.
It is vast.
It's vast. It's diverse. There's tons of different neighborhoods and communities and parts of the city. Mm-hmm. And also the setup of Los Angeles and our transportation system often makes it difficult to explore parts of the city.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I list Justa on here, but I've only been there a couple times in the 9 years that I've lived here because it's a commute. So anyway, I just want to give that disclaimer. There will be many things left off our list, but this is what we like.
Yeah. So let's get into it.
Okay, great. Now, should we kind of tick down the list that we made? I don't know if it's exact, but you have a library. I don't have a favorite library.
Oh, well, my favorite library is the West Hollywood Library.
I've never been. I'm really excited to go.
It is so nice. You can sit in one of the desks on the second floor, third floor, and has this like nice view. You're right by the, like, it's just lovely. So West Hollywood Library,
great spot for working, quiet time.
Yep, they have a big kids room.
Ooh, I love a kids room.
What about bookstore, Kate?
Well, we have different faves.
We do.
I like yours a lot.
I like yours a lot.
I love the Last Bookstore in downtown LA, and it's this huge, beautiful two-story space. I've done readings there, but I've also gone as a shopper, and it's just like kind of it's very magical feeling. It feels like a Harry Potter bookstore.
It does.
It's just gorgeous and a fun place to explore, and I love that whole area downtown. How about you, Dori?
I really like Skylight Books.
A great bookstore.
In Los Feliz.
Los Feliz. You say Los Feliz?
Yeah, I do.
Is that what anyone else says?
Yeah.
People say Los Feliz?
Yeah.
It's Los Feliz.
Is it?
Yes. I lived there for three or four years. Oh boy, this is going to be our most heated discussion yet. Okay, you had a really great nature-y section that you wrote down.
Oh.
Walk, nature walk, and hike.
Well, you know, I just wanted to get a lot of things in there.
No, when I read your initial list, I was very moved at how much like outdoor exploring you've done.
Oh, thanks. Well, for the walk, I really love walking around the Hollywood Reservoir.
So good.
Which is also called Lake Hollywood. It's really quiet. Dogs are not allowed.
I know, which is such a bummer.
Which is a bummer, but I think also makes it much less crowded.
And chaotic.
Yeah, because like I like the Silver Lake Reservoir, but it's crowded. Also, there's a lot more shade at the Hollywood Reservoir.
Yes, it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a real hidden gem in the middle of the
city.
Now
there's like, I saw a bunch of deer there a lot this winter. Like, and since we got a lot of rain this winter, it's been very lush. For a nature walk, I like Franklin Canyon.
I've never done this one.
There's a lot of turtles and birds.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
I did Eaton Canyon as my walk, which is out in the...
I don't know where
I believe
Canyon
it's Eaton
is.
Canyon. It's out in the Pasadena area.
Okay.
And it's a manageable hike to do with children. And it ends at a waterfall.
Oh, what a dream.
Right? And my favorite hike of LA is Fryman Canyon.
Oh, okay.
Here in the valley.
Yeah,
here in
sure.
Studio City.
I like a Temescal Canyon.
Is that out at Malibu?
It's, yeah, Pacific Palisades.
Pretty. I've never done that one either.
It's really pretty.
We didn't name Runyon Canyon.
I mean.
I do have a section here later on called Great Place to See Celebs, and I would throw Runyon onto
Runyon,
that.
Yeah, you could throw Runyon. But like as a place to, I think if you're visiting LA, you should do Runyon.
So Runyon Canyon is a hike kind of right in the middle of Los Angeles.
It's always packed.
And
there's a lot of beautiful people.
It's filled with the most beautiful, like, Instagram model type, yeah. Bachelor contestant type humans.
Yes.
Wearing sexy hiking outfits.
A lot of just like sports bras and leggings.
Yes. Or just shirtless people.
Yes.
And then there's me in my largest sun hat schlepping up.
You can also let your dogs off leash at Runyon.
Yeah. But it's fun just for people watching.
Totally.
It's very LA.
But for a hike, it's like a little much.
There's not a lot of shade.
No.
That's going to be a recurring theme for this episode, too.
There's a nice view from the top, though.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And Griffith Park has really beautiful hikes as well.
Yeah.
Ooh, drive. What's your favorite drive?
You know, I just like a piece. I like PCH.
PCH up towards Malibu?
Well, yeah. I like just like taking PCH kind of to... what's it called? Malibu Country Mart? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I've never... I know there's like a little area where you can get some food.
It's a little like shopping mall, outdoor shopping mall. Another good spot to see celebs.
Oh, yeah.
We saw Flea there.
A Flea sighting.
The celebs you see at these places are always so random.
Yes.
It's just a beautiful drive. I also really like Mulholland Drive. It's also an amazing drive.
Very beautiful.
A little scary,
mm-hmm.
but beautiful.
I love driving. I guess this would also be the PCH. I'm not exactly sure the name of like the road, but driving down through all the beach communities like mm-hmm. Manhattan Beach, Redondo mm-hmm. Beach, Seal Beach. Mm-hmm. And then I love, this is farther south of LA, but driving through Laguna Beach.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful.
Let
yes.
Let the rain fall down.
That's you know where it. Else is beautiful is, have you ever been to Rancho Palos Verdes?
Yes, I have. It's stunning.
It's stunning. Yeah, that's a nice drive. Yeah.
These are all kind of oceany communities.
Rich oceany communities.
Yep. I also realized, I think I just sang the theme song to The Hills. No, I think I got the Laguna Beach theme song right. Did you watch Laguna Beach?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, I sure did.
You had on your list bike ride. I've never been on a bike ride in Los Angeles.
Really?
No, but you have a favorite bike. I mean, I've biked along in Santa Monica along the beach.
Yeah, that's this bike ride.
Oh, that's that bike ride? Okay.
If you start in Pacific Palisades, you can go all the way to Marina del Rey.
But you would have to have your own bike up in Pacific Palisades, right?
Yes.
Because you can rent bikes in Santa Monica and probably Venice along the boardwalk and the
oh,
beach.
Oh, sure, yes.
Which is what I've done.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of the same thing. And
yeah.
Then there's another bike path called Bologna that's along the Bologna Creek.
What's the Bologna Creek?
It runs through like Culver City and then like spits you out in Playa Vista. So
that
you can
great.
You can pick it up. It intersects with the bike path along the expo line.
Okay.
And you can pick it up at Jefferson and La Cienega.
Cool. You're saying Culver City just triggered another favorite bookstore that I must mention.
Oh, please.
The Ripped Bodice.
Oh, yes.
It pardon me for not mentioning it earlier.
You are pardoned.
I love the Ripped Bodice. It is a wonderful, inclusive bookstore for romance books. Hello to Bea and Leah, who are sisters who own it and run it. It's just a fantastic place. It's warm, friendly. There's always someone there to help recommend a great romance book. They have fantastic readings and events and workshops. It's just a real fun spot.
Rip Bodice is great.
And they always, I'm reading a sexy book I just got from there. So anyway, just had to backtrack. It's in Culver City. Okay.
Okay.
What's next on our list?
Well, we both put Olympic Spa down for the spa, which is our favorite Korean spa.
Listen, listeners, if you run into us there, we'll be naked.
We will.
But
be.
You will be naked also. Yes, so it will be very comfortable.
It's also only for female identifying people.
Yes.
I should say.
And I love the cafe.
The cafe is great. If you're looking for a bigger Korean spa experience where you want to go with someone who does not identify as female, I recommend Wee Spa.
You know, I still have not been to Wee Spa, but I am itching to go.
Oh, it is quite an experience.
And you can bring children to Wee Spa, right?
You can.
Yeah.
You can also stay overnight at Wee Spa.
Yeah. I love
it. Which I've seen people like wheeling their suitcases in. Like,
totally.
If you have an early morning flight and you had to like check out of your hotel, you can just go to Wee Spa.
That sounds like a great
and I think it's
layover
like,
spot.
$20 or $30. Yeah.
See you there. So, we skipped romantic spot.
Oh, we did. I said Griffith Observatory.
Beautiful, especially like at sunset.
It's so nice.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I listed a spot that you recommended to me. The rooftop bar and restaurant Terra, which is on the top of Italy. Mm-hmm. This is a Dory recommendation. My husband and I just had a really lovely...
It is so lovely
romantic
there.
...romantic dinner date there.
It's very lovely.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And there's lots of tables and couches, and you can just kind of have like a leisurely, you know, one of those like hours long, numerous hours long.
You can make nights. A reservation for dinner, but I believe the couches in the bar are first come, first served.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. And there's like a fire pit and like, it's just
the
really
food
nice.
Food was great.
Food is amazing. That's a great recommendation.
Well, thank you for romance. Spicing it up. Yoga.
I, for like an independent yoga studio, I really like One Down Dog.
It's a great little studio.
Great little studio. I go to the one in Silver Lake, but they also have locations in Echo Park and Eagle Rock. So check it out.
My yoga studio is a behemoth, but I love it.
Wanderlust.
It's called Wanderlust. It is right in the heart of Hollywood. It has a delightful cafe. It's a beautiful space, and I really, the teachers there just hit the spot for me. I really love it. Dance class. This is Dory's territory.
Well, I said 567 Broadway.
I mean, what else could you say? You could have thrown a real curveball and said something else.
I could have, but I didn't.
One of my old school faves is Yoga Booty Ballet, and I took that for many years at a place called Heartbeat House, which is in Atwater Village, and Heartbeat House has great all sorts of great different kinds of classes. It's a wonderful studio.
And I have taken Yoga Booty Ballet at a place called Swerve.
Yeah, that's more in your neck of the woods.
On 3rd Street.
And also the aforementioned Pony Sweat, a newer experience for me, but if you're on the east side of LA, check it out.
You know what I might get into postpartum?
Talk to me.
Ballet.
I want to take a tap dancing class. Mm. I've never tap danced. Have you ever done ballet?
Yeah, I took ballet for like 7 years.
Oh.
As a child.
I have a lot of friends who take
adult
ballet. I took
a tap dance class when I was 6.
Well, maybe 35 years later, you want to revisit tap with me? I've never tap danced, and it's something I want to do before I, you know, kick the bucket.
Have you watched Sutton Foster's performance of Anything Goes?
No. Should I do that for inspiration?
Yes, you should.
Will I ever get to that point? Like in maybe in like 6 months, right?
Yeah, totally.
Oh boy. Super fancy dinner.
I said Maud.
I still haven't been to Maud.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I mean, it is super fancy. It's a prefix dinner that is owned by a famous chef, Curtis Stone, who has been on the television.
She's Louise, I should say.
It's like, it's become like a special place for my husband and me.
You, it's like kind of your celebration restaurant?
Yes. Okay. Like we went there on our anniversary this past year. We're actually going there this week as a sort of like last dinner before baby.
A baby meal moon.
What about you? Do you have a super fancy dinner rec?
You know, we had a really lovely kind of special dinner at 71 Above.
I have always wanted to go there.
It's cool. It's really neat. I think it's on the 71st floor, hence the name of like an old bank tower. I'm going to get this all wrong, but it's basically in an old building in downtown. It's circular. It has incredible views of the whole city. It's just really kind of like spectacular and beautiful, and the food was fantastic.
Great.
Yeah, it was really lovely. We had a nice meal there. My husband and I think also celebrating. I think that might have been my birthday.
Okay.
Love a celebration.
I also wanted to talk about my favorite Korean barbecue place.
Talk to me.
Which is called Kang Ho Dong Baek Jong.
I have not been there. Can we go together?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Done.
It's really good. There's always a line, so don't go there starving because you'll probably have to wait like an hour.
Okay.
But there's a bar in the same little, it's not a strip mall, but the same little courtyard area that the restaurant is in called Toe Bang, mm-hmm. that I recommend going to wait.
Cool.
While you're waiting for your seat. But I also was thinking about tacos. There's a local chain here called King Taco that is like, if you want like straight up LA tacos, I think it's a good way to get into tacos.
I am a big fan of guisados.
Oh yeah.
Guisados, which there are a bunch of them now in LA.
Yeah.
Really good.
There's also just really good taco food trucks everywhere.
I had a couple restaurants that I've just had great meals at that I wanted to throw out. Broken Spanish, mm-hmm. downtown. Here's Looking at You.
Haven't been to
it's
either
new.
Of them.
It's really great. A classic, also a chain, Din Tai Fung.
Oh, yes.
I love Din Tai Fung.
Din Tai Fung is great.
Their soup dumplings are legendary. Look, Sugarfish, also a chain of LA sushi restaurants.
Yeah.
Always good. John and Vinny's, which is not...
Oh, yeah, John and Vinny's is great, too.
Not a chain. And also, we have really great Ethiopian food here in LA.
We do.
And I like Meals by Gannett, mm-hmm. which I think you just went to a few
weeks ago.
So good. I'm craving it. Also, let's go there.
Okay.
Just a lot of dinners before or after you have this baby.
I mean, I'm into it.
I have one more food place that you have to try, and that's Squirrel. Everybody knows about Squirrel.
Try it.
If you live in LA. It's a great restaurant. Okay. Dory.
Yes.
You want to talk about malls.
I do.
You put favorite mall on this list like it's 1987.
I sure did.
And I'm not mad about it.
You know, because coming from the East Coast, there really aren't outdoor shopping malls.
But
this concept was new to me, except for Shoppers World in Framingham.
Oh my God, the most, which I believe was the first mall ever.
It was, and it doesn't exist anymore.
Let me tell you, people who grew up in Massachusetts in the 80s know the truth. That is the best mall to ever live.
Yeah, but like, it's gone now.
Yep, I went there with my mom so much.
I mean, opening an outdoor mall in New England was probably not the move.
Very courageous. Very bold thinking.
Now, opening an outdoor mall in Los Angeles.
Yeah, but your choice is very out of left field for me.
Is it?
Uh-huh.
How so? Did you think I would say The Grove?
Of course.
Look, I love The Grove.
The Grove is kind of like the OG, it's in the middle of LA, outdoor mall. Fountains.
Like Italian Rococo, like ridiculous Tuscan decor.
I mean, I don't know if you want to say ridiculous. Maybe stunning.
Look, I love The Grove.
Always get a good celeb sighting at The Grove.
Yes.
That's where I see my most bachelor and bachelorette contestants.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. That tracks. But in terms of like an actual mall where I would want to shop like at many stores.
Sure.
I gotta say the Westfield Century City.
I've been there only a handful of
times.
Does
it for me.
Okay.
Eataly is there.
Mm-hmm. Delish.
There's in terms of food, there's also a La Colombe coffee shop, which is a coffee shop that started in Philadelphia. I have a soft spot for.
Isn't there a Din Tai Fung there?
There, I believe there is a Din Tai Fung. There's also a Container Store.
Well, now we're talking.
Okay. There's an Aritzia, which is a great clothing store that I like.
All right.
There's an Equinox Gym.
Just in case you want to work out in between all the shopping.
There's also like a doctor's office. Like there's like a million things here. It's outdoors.
You feel very drawn to this mall. There's a movie theater. There's a big movie theater there.
There,
like I've seen screenings there.
Is a movie theater? Yes, there's an AMC movie theater there. Look, I just think it's a great mall. Okay.
Well, look, I think also a lot of these faves kind of depend on what side of town you live on.
True. I mean, but I don't live near the Westfield Century City.
No, you're just drawn to it.
I'm just drawn to it.
You can't resist.
Like a moth to a flame.
Well, I love the Americana.
Okay, which is the sister mall of the Grove.
The Americana is an outdoor mall. It's across the street from the Glendale Galleria, so I kind of just consider them all the same. But
it's kind of like the Arsenal Mall and the Watertown Mall.
These are such specific references
or
for
the Atrium people and the who Chestnut are from Boston. Hill Mall.
Yeah. These are only Massachusetts references, and also one part of Massachusetts. But yes, it is kind of like that. But you can cross the street
to get
to them. A
mall across the street from another mall.
Yes, just many malls.
That genre of mall.
Yep. And the Americana is an outdoor mall. It is ridiculous. It has fountains like at the Venetian. What's the hotel with fountains in Las Vegas?
The Bellagio.
Yes, there's like musical fountains. There's a trolley around the holidays in December. They make it snow at night.
Also, the Americana and the Grove smell the same.
Yes, because they have a signature candle, which I buy.
And the hotel that I went to on my solo baby moon
had that candle.
Well, it's owned by Rick Caruso.
Oh.
Who owns the Americana and the Grove.
Oh, that guy.
And it smelled like it.
This candle is it's like expensive in a way that is embarrassing to me that I bought mm-hmm. it, but it smells so good. I love it so much. I've bought this candle multiple times. Did I just say that?
Sorry, I don't mean to.
Nope. I'm going to stand with it. I've bought the candle numerous times. Editor Dory. I have purchased the candle numerous times. And you have to go to the concierge at the mall if you want to purchase
a
candle.
Tip.
Yep. So listen, if you're interested, that's where to go. But
also,
I love the Americana. It's great. You can like hang out, lounge on the fake grass. It's just delightful.
The Americana is bigger than the Grove.
It does have stores
it has
I like.
More stuff.
Yeah, and because you can go across the street to the Glendale Galleria, hit up that Steve Madden shoe store.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway, there are two Apple stores, one in each mall. It's ridiculous. Okay.
Moving on.
Movie theater.
I said the ArcLight,
the best,
but specifically the Cinerama Dome.
Yes,
I mean it's so cool.
It's so cool.
It's like it feels very LA.
I mean, I hate to say this again, another great place for like a weird celebrity sighting.
The ArcLight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a celeb at the movies kind of sighting.
Yeah, totally.
I did write a couple other celeb sighting spots.
Oh yeah. Go
Do
on.
You have like fave celeb sighting places?
Well, there's a random, this is sort of random, but I feel like every time I go to Sycamore Kitchen on La Brea, which is this little spot for breakfast and lunch, I've often seen celebrities there. I saw Bradley Cooper there.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I saw Billy Zane there.
Like yeah, I'll take it.
I've seen like random people. There's also, it's always also a great place to go during lunch to overhear really douchey Hollywood conversations.
Oh, I love my favorite kind.
Yeah. So I recommend it for that reason.
Little Dom's.
Yes. Always celebrities
Los
there.
Feel is always a celebrity.
Yes.
Oh, hot spot. I
totally.
Saw Robin there. I missed Ryan Gosling by like a second there. That's a great spot. Cafe Gratitude on Larchmont.
Oh, interesting.
There's always just like a random celebrity there when I'm there.
Okay.
I will also add, every time I've waited in line to buy meat for Christmas at McCall's, I've been next to a famous person. And that is also a meat shop, a butcher in Los Feliz.
Also the Gelson's on Franklin is a celeb hotspot.
That's Angelina Jolie's Gelson's apparently. Dory and I had a great celebrity sighting at Cafe 101. It's a great little coffee shop. Do you remember?
Oh, yes, we did.
We did. We saw John Hamm.
We did.
We saw
alone.
John Hamm. Mm-hmm. Was he reading a newspaper or was he on his computer?
I think he was on his computer, but he definitely looked like he came there. He goes there every day.
And he also definitely looked as hot as you want.
He had a baseball cap on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Okay.
What about where people should go to hear music?
I love the Hollywood Bowl.
Me too.
I don't see a lot of music. I'm too old to go to like cool hip concerts.
Sure, same.
But the Hollywood Bowl, you can't beat it. It's gorgeous.
You know what my recommendation is for the Hollywood Bowl?
Tell me everything.
If you can afford it, get one of the boxes.
I've never had one of those, but I want
one. Oh my God.
Because there's like a table. Like you can literally just set up and have your meal there.
You have, they're little boxes of four or six people. There's only a few six person ones or mostly four person ones. And they have little tables and you can like eat your dinner there. You can bring wine into the Hollywood Bowl, which is just like a very civilized way of seeing a concert.
The Hollywood Bowl, you can also picnic outside before and bring your picnic in. And like we've sat in just the nosebleed seats there, which are just kind of benches.
Yeah.
And just full on had like a feast.
Oh yeah. Totally.
And everybody, people have all sorts of accoutrements. They bring little picnic baskets. Yep. They bring comfy seating pads. Yep. It's a real LA scene.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's so much fun. If you're visiting LA and it happens to coincide, they're only there in the summer, but it happens to coincide with a concert at the Hollywood Bowl, I would highly recommend
it. And the LA Phil plays there a lot. Yes. And it's just like a gorgeous setting.
It's stupendous.
The sun sets around you.
It's really lovely.
I had museums. Because I think we have fantastic museums here in LA and don't get a lot of credit for our museums.
That's true. What are your favorite museums here?
I love the Broad, which is downtown. The Getty is fantastic.
Yes.
LACMA.
And the Getty Villa, I should say.
Yeah, it was very cool and beautiful. Mm-hmm. The Simon Norton Museum, which it's in Pasadena. It's small, but it's just beautiful. It has a beautiful kind of outdoor sculpture garden. And then MoCA.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the Contemporary Art Museum is downtown, is also great. And I will say I've brought my kids to all of these museums. A lot of them have children areas. Mm-hmm. They're very open to having kids at these museums. Like I've never been made to feel weird or bad.
There's also the Natural History Museum.
A very good kid museum.
There's a gem room at the Natural History Museum.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
That is really cool.
And they have this butterfly exhibit in the spring where you get to walk through butterflies.
And also LACMA.
Oh, of course. LACMA.
Yeah. Is there anything else we want to just like mention?
Okay. I do want to say the Magic Castle.
Yes.
Which you have to have you have to know somebody who can get you in there.
There's a loophole though.
Oh, there is?
Yes. You can stay at the hotel.
And can anyone stay at the
yes,
hotel?
Yes, okay. Anyone can stay at the hotel. And then if you stay at the hotel, you can get in.
The Magic Castle is essentially a members club for magicians. And us lay people can go and they have a restaurant upstairs and then magic shows and different bars and rooms. And there are also places where magicians are just hanging out and the bartenders do magic. It's just so much fun.
It's so weird. And like it could only exist here.
That's the best.
It's really special.
Yeah, it is truly the best. I also love Angel's Flight.
I've never done it.
Which is, I don't know what you would call it. It's not a trolley.
It's a funicular.
Thank you. but you can take it up by where the Broad is and take it down to Grand Central Market.
And it was closed for years.
Yes, years. And it is open again. And it's really, really fantastic. And then also there are lots of gardens in Pasadena, Descanso Gardens, Huntington Gardens, just beautiful spaces for exploring.
Yeah.
Grand Park downtown, if you want your kid to splash in a fountain. And I will also say if you need like a kid activity, the Skirball Center Kid Space, which is a museum in Pasadena, or the Aquarium of the Pacific and the LA Zoo are all great kid friendly spots.
I've also heard, I've never been, but I've heard the Autry.
I've also never been to the Autry.
But I've heard it's a great spot for kids.
Yes, and they have like a night out, kind of monthly night out thing that I know a lot of people go to with their kids. And we also have fantastic farmers markets in LA.
Yes.
Weekend farmers markets and some during the week too.
The Hollywood Farmers Market. Mm-hmm,
Studio City. Great produce, great food.
Yeah.
And then always, you know, like a thing for your kids to do.
I mean, what's not to love?
We've barely touched on the offerings of the city.
But we hope that gives you a little
If you're coming to visit,
guide.
These are some things we enjoy.
Yeah. You might see us at one of these places.
Again, and if you see us at Olympic, we will be naked.
Mm-hmm.
on that note.
Okay, we're going to take a short break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. Sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable. With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift. All while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there. Especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups still without the underwire to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode.
Our guest today is Esme Wang. Welcome, Esme.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, we are so psyched to have you. I'm going to read your bio Esme Wang is a novelist and essayist. She is the author of the New York Times best-selling essay collection, The Collected Schizophrenias, for which she won the Grey Wolf Nonfiction Prize. Her debut novel, The Border of Paradise, was called a best book of 2016 by NPR and one of the 25 best novels of 2016 by Electric Literature. She was named by Granta as one of the best of young American novelists in 2017 and won the Whiting Award in 2018. Born in the Midwest to Taiwanese parents, she lives in San Francisco and can be found at esmewang.com and on Twitter at Esme Wang. And your book is marvelous. Mm-hmm. Thank you for writing it.
Thank you for reading it.
Yeah, it's really a special book. Do you want to kind of give our listeners a short précis of what your book is about?
Sure. So the shortest description that I can give of the book is that it is a collection of essays about schizophrenia. It's not so much a memoir. Some people might describe it as a memoir or a memoir in essays, but I've never thought of it as such. They may be considered a collection of 13 personal essays. Some are more or less about me, and some are more or less memoiristic, but they range from talking about diagnosis to talking about involuntary hospitalization to discussing the Slender Man case and what happened to those girls in Waukesha. Mm. In all, there's a kind of arc to the book or a number of arcs to the book that I find hard to describe, but in all, I tried to, with this book, bring attention to the experience of the schizophrenias, not just from outsiders or clinicians, but also from someone who is diagnosed with a form of the schizophrenias, and in my case, schizoaffective disorder bipolar type.
Can you talk about how you got this diagnosis? I mean, I know you go into it in the book, but just kind of for the benefit of listeners who may not have read your book yet.
Sure. So it was a long road. And it is such the case for many people with this diagnosis. It usually takes a long time. So I had been diagnosed with many different psychiatric diagnoses starting from a young age. So I started having, my parents could tell that there was something going on with me from the time I was about 5 or 6. I was starting to exhibit very anxious behaviors, some obsessive compulsive behaviors. And then around 11, I started to have more of major depressive behaviors. And then at the age of about 15 or 16, I was seeing my school counselor, and I finally saw my first psychiatrist, and they diagnosed me with panic and major depressive disorder or you know, clinical depression. Mm-hmm. And then at about 17 or 18, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder right before I went to college. Summer before I went to college at Yale, and it took a while, but so I started to experience my first psychotic symptoms when I was at Stanford, where I had transferred to after 2 hospitalizations at Yale. I started to experience psychotic symptoms during my junior year or so. And it took 8 years for my psychiatrist to finally say, okay, I think you have schizoaffective disorder, even though we knew that something was going on. Mm. And just really briefly, I think because schizoaffective disorder is not one of those disorders that is very well known, schizoaffective disorder is what I like to call a mashup of schizophrenia and a mood disorder, in my case, bipolar disorder. And so I knew that something was going on and that it wasn't just bipolar disorder, because I was having psychotic symptoms, more specifically hallucinations and delusions or false beliefs, during periods when I wasn't having mood episodes. And that is the sign of schizoaffective disorder. And yet my psychiatrist at the time was very reluctant to call it anything but bipolar disorder. We called them things like sensory oddities. We had a lot of different coded language to describe these psychotic experiences. And that's for a number of different reasons, I think, and I talk about this in the book. But eventually, in around 2013, bordering on 2014, it got to the point where it was so severe that my psychiatrist finally just, you know, put it in my HMO record that I had schizoaffective disorder.
I mean, one thing you talk about in the book is being high functioning while also having schizophrenia. You write, schizophrenia and its ilk are not seen by society as conditions that coexist with the potential for being high functioning and are therefore terrifying. Do you think that it was partly because you were so high functioning that you didn't get the diagnosis for so long?
Sort of. I think that what, and I can't really speak so much for my psychiatrist at the time because I can't read her mind, but, right. But what I think happened was that my psychiatrist saw that I was actually doing fairly well. I had a job. I was, you know, before I had a job, a full-time job, I was doing well in school. I graduated with a 3.99 at Stanford. I was doing fairly well considering I was having these like really brutal hallucinations and delusions. And so to tell me that I had this extremely severe diagnosis had the potential of really shifting the way I saw myself, even if absolutely nothing changed but the label, it was really possible that I would start to see myself differently. And you know, not only myself, but, you know, also my family, if I share that diagnosis, or my husband, or my friends, potentially even, you know, my insurance company, anybody who had access to this diagnosis, once it was made official, could think of me differently. And I think that's what my psychiatrist at the time wanted to protect me from.
Mm. Oh boy. Yeah. That must have been, how does it affect the way that you looked at yourself getting your diagnosis? I mean, how did it kind of change your understanding of who you are? If that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, I had already had a lot of education about abnormal psychology, and I knew a lot about schizoaffective disorder at the time. I'd read a lot. I was also working as a lab manager at the Stanford Psychology Department at the time, and I'd worked there for about 3 or 4 years. So I knew that it was very likely that I had schizoaffective disorder. I had kind of assumed that I had that diagnosis. And so by the time I officially had the diagnosis, it wasn't a surprise to me at all. It was actually kind of a relief. So once I received the diagnosis officially, it wasn't this big shock in the way that receiving a diagnosis of clinical depression or bipolar disorder had been for me earlier in my life. It was more like, okay, finally, everybody agrees. This is what this is. And so that's how that felt at the time.
And how did your family and your husband and your friends react to this new diagnosis?
You know, I think they reacted fairly well, considering, I mean, this is especially considering that they had been through so much with me,
right?
Given my mental health issues. My husband and I have been together for almost 18 years now. We met in 2001, a week before 9/11 happened. And, you know, we started dating then. So we've been together for a really long time. And he's seen me through a lot of really horrible episodes of illness. And so this was just one more thing, you know. It wasn't so much the diagnosis that was terrifying for them, I think, but to witness me actually going through what the diagnosis was. I mean, right. It wasn't so much like hearing Esme has this new diagnosis, but like actually getting the call from me saying like, hey, see, like there are spiders in my brain and you need to come home, or like him making tea for me and then me accusing him of poisoning me, you know, like that was the stuff that was hard. It wasn't the actual diagnosis.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article, and I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. Gorgeous planters, and then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs, including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. I mean, you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I also loved how in your book you talk about talking to your mom about your family lineage, and not that you were surprised to discover that other people had struggles with mental illness in your family, but how many people weren't talked about, like how many kind of blank spots there still were in the history, and how so often it goes undiscussed and undisclosed. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if now that your book is out, have you encountered other people with similar experiences with their families? Is that something you think is common?
Oh, it's so common. Often the most interaction I get to have with people who have read the book will be in the signing line at events. So, you know, people will come up with their book and they'll get to talk to me while I'm signing their book, and they'll tell me a little bit about their story. And from the little bit I get from those interactions, I'll hear about, you know, I feel like the most affecting stories that I hear are from people like me, whose families are immigrants, who are dealing with the kind of stigma, a cultural stigma from their culture, from the cultures of origin or their family's cultures of origin. People whose families are still having a really hard time dealing with their diagnoses, people who whose families don't want to talk about mental illness. And I feel that, you know, they do end up finding a lot of solace in the book, if only because my family ended up finding quite a lovely trajectory from, you know, not wanting to talk about it at all and being really aggressive toward me in terms of, you know, how could you do this to us? We've always given you everything you've always needed. You have a you have a roof over your head, etc. To becoming more understanding and starting to read about the things that I was dealing with, and now they're really proud, and they're looking at like my LA Review of Books review and like messaging me through Line, and they're really proud. But that journey took a really long time, though, and I don't know how to tell these children of immigrants or these immigrants how to replicate that, because there is no one size fits all. But you know, hopefully, I can provide some kind of hope for them.
I'm wondering how definitions of self-care change when you get a diagnosis like schizophrenia. Does self-care just become survival, or is it something more?
Yeah, I think that my story ends up becoming more complicated in the book because I started to have some really severe physical limitations and some really severe physical illnesses. And that ended up being called a number of things, including dysautonomia and late stage Lyme disease. And it was very confusing. People thought I had cancer. I was going from doctor to doctor to neurologist. And it was, at this point, we still, I think it's, I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm dealing with it, and you know, I still use a mobility aid a lot of the time, and there are still a lot of these physical limitations. So that kind of complicates the situation, in addition to the mental illness aspect of things. But in terms of self-care, all of those things, the physical and the mental limitations, those all forced me to slow down and to do self-care. So I, you know, I've been told many times by friends and by strangers that I'm a very good representative of someone who is good at self-care. And I don't quite find this as hilarious as I used to, but I used to find it really funny because I used to be so bad at self-care. I used to work myself to the bone all the time. I would, you know, sit at my computer and not get up. Like, okay, so I would sit at my computer and then just drink coffee endlessly for like 8 hours. And then I would switch to gin and tonics. Like once we reached like 5 o'clock, and then just drink gin and tonics and work until like, I don't know, 1 in the morning. Like, I mean, it was really not a good way of treating my body. And, you know, I don't like to blame myself in terms of saying like, oh, that's why I got sick later, but I'm sure that didn't help. But you know, once you get really, really sick, you're kind of forced to take care of
yourself. You're kind of forced to enact some form of self-care. And so I have had to kind of take a crash course in self-care, and I've had to learn the difference between self-care in terms of, the kind of like going for a massage and like taking a spa and like using like a sheet mask, like that kind of self-care. And then the self-care that looks like, you know, not saying yes to like every single mm-hmm. ask that people make me in my inbox, or, you know, taking down my email address on my website because it's not necessarily safe for me to have my email address out there. Just like not letting people pick my brain, quote unquote, mm-hmm. all the time. Whereas like I used to be really open to that. There are things that I think in one word, boundaries. Like I've just gotten a lot better at boundaries, and I am constantly learning how to become better at boundaries. Like last winter, I took a course with this woman named Randy Buckley called Healthy Boundaries for Kind People. But that's what I aim for, is like healthy boundaries for kind people.
Was there something going on, or were you having a hard time setting boundaries that led you to take that course? Because I was actually going to ask how you started to put into practice this idea of setting boundaries, but it sounds like you really knew that it was something you wanted to work on.
Well, I always just knew that I have been historically really, really bad at setting boundaries. I mean, this is a thing that I've been bad at since I was a child, or since I was at least, you know, in middle school or high school. I always thought that the highest form of, say, friendship was to have like a completely permeable membrane between myself and the other person, and to be available 24 hours a day, to always be there, to never say no, to do everything that I could do, to offer everything that I could, to give all the clothes off my back and more. Like that was what I thought was right and good. And that ended up costing me a lot. And I did it over and over again. I mean, I can point to like so many instances of so many different friendships and relationships in which I kept doing this, and it cost me over and over again. And, you know, the person who actually witnessed all of these relationships and friendships falling apart, because they always inevitably fell apart, was my mother. And she would just kind of shake her head and say, like, you've always been like this, and you're going to have to learn to not be like this. It's been a very, very long and hard road of learning.
I'm curious to hear more about this course that you took.
Oh yeah, because Dory and I both, our interests peaked.
Yes,
like we might.
Yeah, I mean, I signed up for it because I was going through a really hard time with this particular topic. And I had always heard about Randy. Like, Randy and I have met. She lives in the Bay Area. She's like a coach. And I was always really attracted to the that course because of the name of the course, like Healthy Boundaries for Kind People. I liked it because I feel like sometimes people who are kind people, who are quote unquote nice people, who are not particularly good at boundaries, might hear about boundaries and think like, oh, boundaries are mean things that you put into place, and potentially hurt people with, you know. But when I heard about this course, I was like, oh, like maybe this is what I need, because what I need is a way to keep myself from being completely enmeshed with other humans, but in a kind way, but without completely losing myself and without harming myself, because I kept doing it. And so, to be honest, I actually didn't participate that much in the course because I was going through a really hard time with a particular situation that reflected exactly why I needed to be in that course. But I think even being in that course reflected to me why I needed to break away from that particular situation. And then, and I did. And so I think that kind of marked the beginning, hopefully, of me not being as much of a doormat or as much of a boundaryless jellyfish.
Can I ask you about self-care and living with a chronic illness? You wrote a really great essay for Elle a few years ago, and in it you said, when I see women that I admire scoff at the idea of self-care, I shrink because I'm often reading their words on my phone while lying in bed, engaging in the most intense self-care that I can imagine. And the essay was titled, I'm Chronically Ill and Afraid of Being Lazy. And I loved reading it because it really takes to task kind of, you know, our culture that really values work and productivity and the kind of performative aspect of it, and existing in that world when what you need for your self-care is rest and not movement. And I would love to hear you speak to a little bit about what that has been like.
Yeah, like it's amazing because out of all the things that I've written, that essay has been, I am sure, one of the top things that has garnered the most attention and that has made the biggest impact. And, I think there's just so much, and I didn't coin this term, and I don't know if she did either, but Rachel Verona Coate used the phrase productivity anxiety. So I'll just use it now. But there's so much productivity anxiety in our culture.
Yes.
And there's always this worry of like, am I being productive? And it's especially hard when you're dealing with like a very severe chronic illness. And so, when I'm talking about like lying in bed and using my phone and resting, like that's also how I do work. Like, you know, I'm a member of the wing. And so I'll go to the wing, which is a co-working space for women and non-binary people. And I'll lie on the couch and tap on my phone, but I'm actually like writing an essay or something, but like it looks like I'm not doing anything because I'm like lying on a couch. But that's how I work now, because it's like an easy way for me to physically get stuff done. But yeah, that essay is so much about how I've been forced to, in many ways, due to illness and due to disability that I didn't grow up with, I've had to come up with workarounds, and I've had to adjust, and I've had to think about like, okay, what do I do with ambition. Like, I've always considered myself an ambitious person. I've always considered myself to have a good work ethic. And I've also considered my ambition and my work ethic to be two of the best things about me. And what does that mean for me? Like, what does that mean for, like, a person who grew up in a capitalist society? What does that mean for a person who, like, very quickly within the span of a number of years lost the capability to get stuff done, or to get stuff done without a lot of difficulty? I mean, there's a great amount of discussion within the disability rights community about, you know, there's a lot of encouragement about trying to encourage people with disabilities to get back into the workforce. But what about people who are disabled, who can't work, or for whom, like, working is actually detrimental to their health? And I speak about this in the book as well, but, like, sometimes, like, it's important to question, like, why is working the be all and end all of our worth as human beings? And that's something that I've, you know, worked a lot on in therapy, in terms of thinking, like, why do I care so much about how much work I get done? And how much does work ultimately matter to me in terms of my self-worth?
I feel like we talk and think about this all the time.
Yeah, I was actually having thoughts about it today, yeah, with my own self-worth. And I'm so grateful to hear you say that, because you're right. There's so many other things to value besides just our productivity and our work. Mm-hmm. But often we're not told that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, something that my therapist did with me, this was, like, you know, years ago at this point, but she had me identify different ways that I identify. So not just, like, a writer, but also, you know, as a sister, or, like, as a wife, or as, like, as a friend. And, you know, so many of those identifiers do not have to do with work. Mm. And, you know, those identifiers are also valuable.
Well, Esme, it has really been a joy to speak with you today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a delight. Yeah. Thank you.
I know we mentioned your website and your Twitter at the beginning of the interview, but I'll just mention them again. It's esmewang.com, and Twitter is esmewang, at esmewang. Is there anywhere else that people can find you?
I've been really active. I'm always active on Twitter, but I've also recently been very active on Instagram, which is esmewang.
Great. Well, we will follow you everywhere.
We will see you there.
Yeah. thanks again. And everyone, buy her book, The Collected Schizophrenias.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Esme. Bye.
Tori?
Yes.
Have you been stretching?
I have.
Oh, excuse me. As Tori says this, she crosses her legs confidently on my couch.
I'm stretching them out right now, in
Good
fact.
Good for you. That's so great. How have you incorporated stretching into your daily routine?
Well, I've been doing it at night on the very soft new rug that I just got for our office.
Oh, just kind of laying on the floor and rolling out?
Well, I'm not lying down. I'm doing, I don't know how to describe them. I'm, like, stretching my legs. I'm doing some shoulder stretches. Nothing too crazy.
You don't need to go nuts.
I don't need to go nuts. Bo usually comes over and is like, what are you doing? Like, sticks his snout in my face. And then I'm like, and then he walks away. So yeah, just trying to stay stretchy. I also got a massage this week.
Oh, great. That'll
which I think counts as stretching.
Sure. Someone else is stretching.
Yeah, exactly. How about you? How's kids' artwork organizational hell going?
Well,
that's what it says on our
it is what episode it says document. That's what I wrote. I was really in my feelings about it. You're actually sitting in the space where I did a massive purge. And what's left is in these two large full art folders over here. And the things I purged are in my recycling bin, which is full to the brim.
Amazing.
So I got it done. And it feels fantastic.
Kate, I'm very proud of you. And what is your plan going forward?
So with the art organization?
Yes.
Well, I purchased these. I'll link to these kind of plastic art envelopes in a like a 19 by 25 size. So mm-hmm. bigger pieces of art can go in them. And I bought 6 of them. So my thinking is I will have these for the rest of elementary school to stuff either by grade or maybe every 2 grades, whatnot. That's my plan, and store them somewhere. I have a hard time completely getting rid of their art. A lot of people recommended photographing the art or using a service like Archive.
Okay.
But I wanted to hold on to some things because I really like going back and looking at the things I made as a kid. There's something it kind of cool. connects you to who you used to be, I think. Anyway,
yeah.
How about this week, Dory? What are you intentioning up?
Well, again, we're banking episodes, so we're recording this before I have the baby, but it will probably, God, hopefully air after I have the baby. But I just want to do these like last things before the baby. So, you know, we made a dinner reservation. We're going to go to the movies tomorrow.
Oh.
Like just kind of trying to get some, cram some last stuff in.
Wow, that's so sweet.
Yeah. How about you?
I am trying to have patience as I continue my purging.
Okay.
So we use our garage as an office.
Yep.
And it hadn't essentially been cleaned out since the 5 years ago when we moved in here.
Mm.
And so I got rid of a ton of stuff. But now I'm feeling like antsy about getting it all put together. And I'm just reminding myself like, it'll happen.
It'll happen.
Just slow it down and
totally.
Don't get impatient with the process. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay. We'll I mean, so far you have done an amazing job. I'm just looking around your office right now and it is like night and day.
I mean, I think I swept for the first time in 5 years in here.
I can tell.
No, thank you. On that note, Dory, we are going to bid you all farewell.
Farewell.
But before we do, just a friendly reminder that we have a voicemail. You can call us at 781-591-0390. You can always email us, though we may not be able to respond, at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/forever35podcast, where the password is serums.
And if you like the show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, tell a friend, or, you know, say hello to us on social media.
And a reminder that everything we mention on the show, including every single restaurant and everything we talked about at the top of the show, will be on our website, forever35podcast.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at forever35podcast and on Twitter at forever35pod.
And of course, Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. And Lane Hammer is our assistant, who will be listing all those things on our website.
Yes, thank you, Lane. Bye, everyone.
Bye.